to say how us are to sort with God, not the other way around. Now there's an interesting thing that was said through one of the prophets. Now the prophet was Isaiah. Now he lived something like 700 years before Christ was born on the earth. And he was a prophet, and one specific prophecy, if you want to turn to Isaiah chapter 42, I'm not quite sure how I started to look at this or why. But the key thing I want to share is in verse 3, but I'll read from the start of the chapter, Isaiah 42. It says, "Behold my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. He will not cry out or raise his voice, nor make his voice heard in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a dimly burning wick he will not extinguish. He will faithfully bring forth justice." So he's talking about 700 years before Christ came on the earth, he was prophesying about him, this man Isaiah. And that, when he gets to verse 3, it says, "A bruised reed he will not break, and a dimly burning wick he will not extinguish." Now if you looked at the King James Version, it would say about a bruised reed he will not break, but when it comes to the dimly burning wick, it says, "And the smoking flax he will not quench." I wonder why he prophesied that. He was prophesying about the man Jesus. And he was saying about the man Jesus that Jesus would, a bruised reed he wouldn't break, and a dimly burning wick or a smoking flax he would not extinguish. I think the fact is that when this was penned, it was looking all through history, right up to today. Because it's relevant for us today, just as it was back then. Now if you think 700 years from Isaiah to Jesus, 2,000 years from then to now. So we're looking back 2,700 years to when this was first spoken. And the interesting thing about this particular verse is that Matthew, who was a disciple of Jesus, went through the ministry time with Jesus, so he saw him, he heard him, he was with him. And in the book of Matthew, if you turn to chapter 12 in Matthew, you'll see that Matthew quotes that. Matthew chapter 12, verse 18 through 20. "Behold my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom my soul is well pleased." I'll just go back a bit. I'll read from verse 15. No, 14. It says, but the Pharisees went out and counseled together against him, that's Jesus, as to how they might destroy him. They were out to get the religious people of the day were out to get Jesus. They didn't want him around. He was too good. He was healing people on the Sabbath day, on a Sunday or a Saturday. On the Sabbath day, the religious people couldn't stand it. Well, he says, but Jesus, aware of this, withdrew from there, and many followed him, and he healed them all, and warned them not to make him known, in order that what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, saying, behold my servant, that's Jesus, whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom my soul is well pleased, I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not quarrel nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A battered reed he will not break off, and a smouldering wick he will not put out, until he leads justice to victory. So Matthew is quoting what Isaiah prophesied 700 years prior to that. So Matthew's seen Jesus. He's lived with him. He's been around. He's heard firsthand his teachings. He's seen the man and how he lived. And he's fitting this into his account of Jesus. He's putting it there as part of the picture. And this little bit about a battered reed or a crushed reed, he will not break off, and a smouldering wick he will not put out. He's not talking about Jesus himself. He's talking about what Jesus will do and how he will react. Just as another interpretation of that particular passage, in the Message it says, he won't brush aside the bruised and the hurt, and he won't disregard the small and insignificant. He won't hurt people. That's what Jesus is saying, or that's what's saying through the prophets. So why, some 700 years before Jesus, did Isaiah say this? Why was it prophesied? This is God telling Isaiah to tell and write it down and tell the future, in effect, that Jesus was not going to damage the bruise, he wasn't going to break the bruised reed, and he wasn't going to put out the smoking flax. So let's just look at these things. A bruised reed. Well, the reeds in those days were used quite a lot, partly for making musical instruments. Now, in today's picture, we have the clarinet and I think the oboe, which use reeds, and it's the vibration of the reeds magnified down the instrument that produces the sound. And a bruised reed wouldn't be much good, it would be spoiled. The smouldering wick. Now, flax is the plant from which we get the material, the fibre, to make linen. You ladies will know more about it than the men when I start talking about this. So linen is a bit of a luxury material to some extent. It certainly was in their day. But linen was used for a number of things, for making clothing, even for making the sails for ships, because they could make different qualities of linen. But the flax, which was used for linen, was used as a wick in the lamps. So if you had a lamp that was set alight, or and it was expected to produce a flame to produce light, but if it wasn't set up properly, if it was burnt out or something, it wouldn't produce the light. It would just go down to a smouldering sort of thing. So how is that 700 years before Jesus, coming forward 2,700 years now, why is it relevant to us? Something that was penned so long ago, that came from God, because it was a prophet that brought it out. The other day, not many people saw this, but Andrew was up a ladder pulling these lights up. The question is, how long could he have stayed up the ladder? I don't think he could spend his life up there, certainly not. I mean, the time he spent up there were long enough. He had to keep coming down, getting the equipment. He got some pockets and a bag and whatnot to put the things in to climb back up and do the job. He couldn't live up the top. And we as people can't live up at the top of the ladder all the time. We just cannot do it. It's like living up the mountain all the time. You cannot live at that level. But in some of us, there is an expectation that we do that. And if we're not up there, we feel disappointed. We feel that we failed. There's loads of reasons why we can't live up there. You know, we are creatures of human failings. We get disappointed. We get tired. We just get drained sometimes. We get afraid and we get hurt. There's all sorts of things that will stop us living up at that level all the time. So, when I said at the start, how are you today? I was really asking you not to answer me, but what is your spiritual, emotional, mental condition today? Only you and God knows. No one else needs to know. But you and God have a relationship, distant or close, good or bad or whatever. But within that relationship, you feel and act different ways at different times. You cannot always be at the top of the ladder. Sometimes you have to come down to a level to recover, to rest, or perhaps even burnout. Sometimes you've done that much. We got to a stage this week, we'd have a lot on this week, and when it got to Friday, I think the end of Friday, we were about worn out, and we just went home and did nothing. It was Friday night, and a lot of you would be like that. You'll do this, because you have to do these things, but you get to a point where I can't do anymore. That's it. And as well as being physically drained, quite often you'll be spiritually drained as well. I know Andrew said at times when he's given a lot in ministry, it takes a lot out of him, and he has to go like Jesus did. He goes to a quiet place to rest, and we all need to do that at some time. So in terms of the bruised reed, he says, a bruised reed he will not break. And in the message it says, he won't brush aside the bruised and the hurt. Jesus is saying something specific to you and me. When we get to the state where We don't feel on fire for God. We don't feel, we'll get up and go. It's sort of, oh, we just feel so drained and empty. And God said, 2,700 years ago, God said, I know that you will feel that way. And quite often when we feel that way, we will start condemning ourselves. But God says, look, I'm not going to break that bruised reed. When you're hurt, when you're going through that problem, that difficulty, that fatigue or whatever it is, he says, I'm not going to break you. He says, my desire is to heal, not to break. My desire is to make complete, not to destroy. So all that long time ago, Jesus was talking through the prophet about you when you're bruised. That's relevant 2,700 years after it was written. We sometimes forget about the time span. It was a different culture. Completely different culture. If we walked into that, we would feel it very strange. But he was aware that we can be hit by circumstances. There's some awful things happen to us sometimes, and we have to try and work through them. We can be damaged and we can be distressed, so we can't operate properly. You know, the gentleman that I go golfing with, he says, I mean, he's told us before, he's not religious. Well, we aren't either, that's all right. But he lost his brother suddenly. He was there with him. He gave him CPR. And all sorts of things happened, but he lost his brother. And his wife had already been diagnosed with a terminal cancer. He's got to work through that. No words are really going to help him. Something underneath and around about might draw him to the truth of what Jesus said there. He says, I'm not going to break you. These circumstances are throwing such a heavy blow on you. He says, I want to nurse you and bring you through. See, we can be so disabled by circumstances, by emotions, even by relationships. It can happen to any of us. But God says, I'll not damage the bruised reed. You see, He's the healer. He's the healer. When you're bruised and you're hurting, His desire is to heal you. He's also patient with us. It's a good job, isn't it? It's a good job He's patient with us, because we can throw tantrums, we can get moods, we can fall out with God, we can do all sorts of things. He's patient with them. 2 Peter chapter 3 verse 9 says, not wishing for any to perish. He doesn't want anybody to perish. He's going to lean over to you to do all that is possible, beyond humanly possible, to bring you through to restoration. He sees the possibilities. Now Matthew chapter 19 and verse 26 tells us that with God all things are possible. We often limit the possibilities of God to our own understanding. Yeah. Have you ever worked out all the possible things that can happen from the situation that you find yourself in? And when reality actually comes and you walk through, you find you've come a different way to any that you imagined. That's happened to me on very big things that I thought were completely impossible to solve. And God's done it, and He's done it so differently to anything I could have imagined. He loses. He tells us that He is love. That 1 John chapter 4 verse 16 says, God is love, and the one who abides in love abides in God. You abide in love. You know, we're saying that one of the most difficult things for human beings to do is to forgive. When you are hurt, it's one of the most difficult things to, because your hurt means that you want to kick back. You want to hurt the one that hurt you. Or, you know, there's so many things fight against it. But forgiveness, like I've said this quite recently before, that Bish, when he was here, not everybody knows Bish, but when Bish was here, he used to get us to sing a chorus when we were giving the offering. And it was, for giving brings a release. And all I could hear when I said was, forgiving. Forgiving brings a release. And forgiveness does bring release. I know sometimes that we've seen on the news, and I don't know why they do these, they try to extract the most grief they can when they're interviewing these that have gone through some terrible event, and then how do you feel? Terrible, yeah. But they're interviewing them in that situation. But some of them have said, I forgive the person that's done this. I forgive the person that's done this. And they've found the secret. They've found the secret. And it must have taken tremendous resolve to do that. But God knows that forgiveness brings healing. Another thing about God is He's gentle. He's gentle. We often think that when we go through things and we get it all wrong, that somebody's going to come down with a big stick on us. And sometimes we've grown up with that sort of thing in the back of our mind, that God's going to stamp on us or do something. But it says He's gentle. Matthew 11 verse 29 says, I, Jesus, am gentle and humble in heart. And He ain't going to change. He's not going to change. He's the same loving, gentle helper, father, friend, hero, everything. But He's gentle. We've got this concept that gentleness can mean weakness. And it's quite the opposite, actually. It can be quite the opposite. I know my dad's brother, and my dad's brother was diagnosed with cancer, and he was given so long to the, and I only heard snippets because I wasn't all that old. And he asked for all the details of what he was going to go through. Anyway, he went through and he died. I went to the funeral. And throughout the service, one thing they said about him repeatedly was, he was a gentle man. He was no coward, he was no weakling. But he was a gentle man. And I mean, I I sort of only know Uncle Frank as I was growing up. But obviously, a lot of other people knew him and knew who he was. So if they say that about you at your funeral, you were a gentle man or a gentle lady, then it's to your credit. See, God is into restoration. When he sees the bruised reed, when he sees you in that bruised state, he wants to restore you. He wants to restore you to full life. He wants to rebuild, and he wants to encourage you. In Psalm 23, we have this: He restores my soul. He restores my soul. You know, God must know we're not perfect. He must, well, obviously, he knew. But to actually put it into the prophet's heart to send this message down through history, because it's been sitting there, and Matthew has reiterated it, that God loves us no matter what. What about this about the smoking flax? We had the one about being bruised, but the smoking flax is the situation a person gets themselves in. Remember, if you've ever seen a lamp, we tended to run more paraffin lamps. It's the same principle. You have a wick, but the wick goes down into the paraffin and draws the paraffin up and produces the flame. They had oil, so it was something similar with the wick that burnt, and obviously they didn't have electricity and things, so the only light they got at night was from a flame. So they would either have a torch or a lamp. So the fact that it was smoking and not burning meant there was something wrong. Something had gone wrong. It might have been burnt out, worn out. The wick had perhaps, worn down. But it wasn't functioning right. For whatever reason, it wasn't functioning the way it should have done. And of course, it would have gone cold. It wouldn't be giving out the heat, would it? It would just smouldering. You wouldn't get the warmth that comes from the flame. No flame. Interestingly, if you were here on Wednesday, Pastor Andrew said something. I thought, I'll write that down because I knew what I was putting together. And it says, he talked about firebrands. He says, setting lives on fire for Jesus. The smouldering wick is no good as it is. It's got into that state over a period, probably. Nobody's looked after the lamp. Nobody's seen to it. So it's gone down. There's a number of things that need to be done to relight the lamp, to get it working as it should. First of all, we have to clean the wick. Now, relating this to us, Psalm 51 verse 10. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew an upright spirit within me. We can clean the wick. If you're just smouldering now instead of burning brightly, you need to clean the wick. Get yourself able to produce. We need some movement of hair to get the oxygen around the wick. The wind of the Spirit. This is what we need to catch hold of. You know, the Spirit The word, if you looked in the original language, the word is pneuma. Relates to breath. Pneumonia is when the airways are diseased, you get pneumonia. So we need the wind of the Spirit within us to get the thing breathing, get the oxygen going. Tells us that God is Spirit. God is the pneuma. That pneuma is spelled P-N-E-U-M-A. Right? And that's how it comes. It comes through the Spirit. So we have to cleanse the wick, trim the wick. We have to get the wind of the Spirit moving. And we need some fuel in our lamp. We can't burn without oil. That's going to come from the Word of God. That's going to come from prayer and just being involved with God. It's waking up the lamp, getting things working. And we have to re-establish the purpose. You know, often when we do smouldering, we've lost the sense of what we're supposed to be doing. We've lost where we're going. Need to establish the purpose. What's the purpose of a lamp? To burn brightly. Now, what did Andrew say? Setting lives on fire for Christ. If we burn brightly, then others are going to catch it. Others are going to catch the light, aren't they? They're going to see that light shining. We need to re-establish the purpose. A few scriptures here. Matthew chapter 5 verse 16. Let your light shine before men. Let your light shine. No use going around smouldering. You're no use to anybody. It serves no purpose. We need to light. We need to be a light. Isaiah 60 verse 1 says, arise, shine, for your light has come. Jesus is our light. Now it says that moths are attracted to the light. You can see them sometimes you go camping, it's interesting, and you get one of these little lights and it's dark. The moths just zone into the light. You see, we have Jesus. We need to zone in on Jesus. We might not be like somebody else. We're not meant to be like somebody else. We're meant to be like Jesus. You can't say, oh, I'm not like such and such, so I'm no good. Often we do condemn ourselves. If we, you know, so-and-so's got 10 O-levels. I've only got one. Or I've got none. So they're better than us. No, they're not. No, they're not. They're different. They might be academically brilliant. You might be academically challenged. But you will have talents in other ways that they don't have. So you have to find your own place in Jesus. Your own place with Him. He's taking you on a journey. Luke chapter 12 verse 35 says, be dressed in readiness and keep your lamps alight. It talks about the virgins that would trim the lamps, some didn't. But keep your lamp trimmed. This has nothing to do with anybody else. This is to do with you and God, and you and Jesus. You might have sticky patches in your life, real difficult times in your life, where just to keep any light flickering is a big challenge because of the circumstances sometimes that come upon us. But Jesus wants to see that light burning. He's going to be with you fire because He's there. What did He say? A smouldering wick He will not put out. Or in the message, he won't disregard the small and insignificant. You might only have a small flame burning. God can do a lot with that small flame, and it doesn't have to stay a small flame. John chapter 8 verse 12 says, I, Jesus, am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. So if you're a bruised reed or a smoking flax, if you're in that sort of position, that state, be encouraged, because God is for you. He's not abandoning you. He's not giving up on you. So often we give up because we think God's given up, and he hasn't. He hasn't. He sent this prophecy through history. The fact that Matthew penned it 700 years after Isaiah penned it, and we've got the Bible today, and it took a long time for us to get the Bible, remember? The ordinary person didn't have the Word of God until the last 100, 200 years. So we have a special privilege in having this book. Sometimes we're going through something and we think, will it ever end? You're bruised, your light's gone out, will it ever end? Well, Jesus tells us something in Psalm 84 about passing through the valley of Baca. Now the word Baca meant weeping, passing through the valley of weeping. And we've all the adults at some time will have gone through that valley at some time, from some instances or other. But the thing about that, it says we're passing through, we're not staying, we're passing through. It says, if you read that verse in its entirety, it says, passing through the valley of Baca, they make it a spring. The early rain also covers it with blessings, and they go from strength to strength. Sometimes that going through the valley of Baca experience, although it's so painful at the time, can produce a good foundation for the future.